Welcome to the Fabric Podcast. In the midst of a contentious U.S. election, it can feel like winning and losing are the only realities. And yet, for many of us, it can feel like no matter who wins, we lose. In this episode, we're trying to create some space, some peace and settling, so that we can more deeply explore our hope of something truly better than compromise.
Tuesday, November 3rd happened. Now it's a couple days afterward, and we're still not quite sure whether Joe Biden or Donald Trump was elected President of the United States of America. You probably know by the time you're listening to this, but Congress is also still for grabs, and that's, of course, before any challenges that are being made have their outcomes. I mean, like, who knows? Yeah, and I don't know where you are. I don't know how you're feeling about all this, whether you view the election results with celebration or dismay, whether it's confusion, confidence, resignation, or somewhere in between and in the mix of all that sort of stuff. Regardless, this is a good time to take a breath, figuratively and literally. This is not the time to climb up on a soapbox or to run and hide. This isn't the time to spring into action immediately. This is the time to breathe. There's no doubt about it. There is a lot of work to do. We as a nation, even though we had this wonderfully encouraging thing of more people turning out to vote than we've ever seen before, we know that there's too much us and them and not enough of just plain us. And before we are able to conquer any of the big problems that we have as a nation, I think we're going to have to figure out how to be us again. And before we can start taking on all that task, especially considering the divisiveness between us, we're going to have to figure out who we are ourselves first. And that's what we want to do today. We want to take this episode of Better Than Compromise as a time to pause, as a time to step back and to take that breath and make sure that we're going into what we got to do, the big push that is to come, centered in who we are, settled in ourselves, able to be the people we want to be. If there's anything I've noticed over the years, it's when I'm not settled in myself, when I'm not clear about who I am and what I'm doing or why I'm doing it, I tend to not be real helpful out there. I tend to get pretty frustrated because I'm banging away at something and I don't really know what I even want. Sometimes I find that I'm even dangerous. So knowing who I am, knowing that I have found that settled place, getting a sense of where I am, is really important for me to be stepping out into what I want to do. I think it's the same for all of us. Chances are maybe it doesn't come down to that at all for you. You might just plain be tired. You might just be worn out and discouraged by this week. You might be feeling like the anxiety level is over the roof with the pandemic and with economic issues on top of the politics. And you would just like to take a week off. So we're kind of doing that. Rather than jumping into more details about Better Than Compromise, which are really important and we're excited to get to, we just want to breathe. We just want to create a space for you this week, for you to settle in and to figure out who you are and what you want to be about. Okay? You with me on that? Let's take some time to do it. I think we've got some good ways of creating that kind of space for you to just get that breath and get ready for the push that you have to come. Valerie Kaur of Revolutionary Love and her new book, See No Stranger, has some amazing things to say about this. She talks about love as being sweet labor, the giving of birth, and that in the process of giving birth, we both breathe and push, breathe and push. Pushing is coming. Right now, it's time to breathe. So here's what I like us to be doing right now, okay? You've got a lot that you're carrying around now, right now, and it's weighing on your shoulders. A lot of it is just all the tough stuff that 2020 has brought you. And a lot of it are the things that you feel like you need to do that are so important, they're urgent, and you can't wait. I'm not going to even try to name them. I think just saying all them out loud, it adds to stress, and you know what they are already. I want you to just to slow down with me for a moment. You may even want to pause this podcast once in a while in order to have the time and the space that you need to do it. Okay? That could be a really good idea. So think about it. What are those things that are weighing on you right now? Could be the ones that we're all feeling as a society, or it could be some very specific ones just to you and to your situation. Pick one of them out. Close your eyes if that makes sense for what you're doing and where you are right now, and visualize it. If you got a piece of paper there, write its name on the paper or draw a picture of it, abstract as you want. I don't care. But what I want you to do is I want you to know it. What is that thing that is weighing on you? Don't be in a hurry with it, okay? This isn't to get it out of the way. Get to know it. Now, look carefully at what it is that you're visualizing, what you named or what you drew. Take it in. I want you to let it know that you know it is trying to take over who you are, and you're not going to let it. Right? No hurry here. Look it in the face. See it as something apart from you. And with its name on your lips, I want you to reach out with both hands, arms extended. Take it by the shoulders and gently move it off to the side and tell it, I know that you're there. I do have to deal with you, but not right now. Right now, I need to find the life within me. I need to breathe. How'd that feel? When you thought about that thing that's in your way right now, that weighs so heavily on your shoulders, was it your shoulders? Was it your gut? Was it in your neck? Is it a shortness of breath? Is it your blood pressure rising? Where did you feel it? As you took it by the shoulders and looked at it with some compassion, because it is a part of you, right? Push it off to the side. What did you feel then? Pick out another one. Pick out one more of those things that weigh on you. One of those things maybe that you feel responsible to go do right away, maybe guilty for not doing it. What is it? Visualize it. Write its name down. Draw its picture. Name its name. And get to know it. Let it know again that you know it's trying to take over who you are, and you're not going to let it. See it? Do you see it apart from you, even though maybe it is part of you? And say its name on your lips as you reach out with your hands and take it by the shoulders and gently move it off to the side again with the other and tell it as well, you wait here too. I know I have to deal with you, but not right now. Right now, I need to find the life within me. You may have 6 or 7, you may have 10 or 20. Take time today. Set those off to the side. They are not unimportant. We are not saying that there aren't urgent things that really matter that we need to take care of. We can't forget about. We are not suspending that. But what we're saying is that we need to be whole before we can do it. When was the last time someone told you it's okay just to be? That you were able to carve out that time, that space, just to be. Not to be lazy, but to be. To understand what that whole self, what that cell self, what the first strand of true self is all about, so that you weren't just unhelpful and frustrated and maybe dangerous in the world. I want to find a couple of ways to help you have that space right now. You already decided you're going to be listening to this podcast, so you've got a little time. So while you're doing whatever it is you're doing, join me in this. Start just by taking that breath. You have been breathing all along. Be intentional about it. Sit up straight. Put your feet on the floor if that works. Roll your shoulders out. Take that breath. Be comfortable. Sit up what feels tight. And let it out. Breathe in the world. But you don't have to hold it all. Breathe it out. Take that breath in. Feel the real world filling and supporting you. Breathe it out. This kind of taking space for self is not selfish. This is self-responsible. This is making sure that you are blessing the world with who you are, not inflicting the world with who you are. Self-care is important. This week, it can be really hard, and it's really important. You may be just pushed beyond the limit right now. And if you're not, it's still good to build up those resources. Self-love comes physically. I hope you're eating well, taking time to cook what you want, have that good food, stuff that feels right, to enjoy how you eat it. The exercise, movement, sleep that you need. It's also giving yourself the right messages. Reminding yourself, yes, I'm connected to all those people I'm concerned about and I need to do something about. But ultimately, the only thing that's truly in my circle of control is me. So I'm starting there and reaching out through that to the world that I'm concerned about. Second cousin to self-care is gratitude. When you get up in the morning, are you spending some time thinking about all the things that are going right in this world? All the stuff that there is to be grateful for, that you are thankful for? Can you make a list that is as long as you can imagine? Thanksgiving is about 3 weeks away. Spending some time letting that sense of gratitude not just be a laundry list, but of something that wells up in your heart and makes it bigger, makes you bigger, makes you touch the world with compassion and tenderness, the appreciation and respect, the value that you have for someone or something when you know that you are thankful for it or for them. Gratitude. It's a close cousin as well of wonder. This world is so amazing. As I record this, the sun is setting, and I see people walking on the sidewalk outside our windows, and every one of them, when I watch that sun setting, just seems like another beautiful person. It's probably lucky I don't know them all. I might have a little bit more trouble, but from my window, and I see them, I imagine their lives, imagine the worlds with all the troubles, the anxieties that might be there, and I wish breath to them, and I breathe. And I wonder. I wonder at the gift that they are to their families and to their friends, that they are to my community and to our nation. I wonder about how they can be partners with me when I get ready to push, when I get ready to try to take my love to this world. Jeanette Mayo is one of the people woven deeply into our fabric community. She continually surprises us with her images and with her words. She is an accomplished nature photographer and also is able to find poems that are always meaningful when you see them on the page. But when she connects them with her images or when she connects them with the purpose that she has in mind for them, they become magic. Jeanette tends to find nature to be a place that grounds her. It isn't just a hobby to do this photography, but it's something that helps her be who she knows she needs to be. I tend to find the same thing. Here, Jeanette is sharing with us Wendell Berry's poem, The Peace of Wild Things.
When despair for the world grows in me, and I wake in the night at the least sound, in fear of what my life and my children's lives may be, I go and lie down where the wood drake rests in his beauty on the water, and the great heron feeds. I come into the peace of wild things who do not tax their lives with forethought of grief. I come into the presence of still water, and I feel above me the day-blind stars waiting with their light. For a time, I rest in the grace of the world and am free. The Peace of Wild Things by Wendell Berry.
This poem reminds me a bit of the 23rd Psalm, probably because of the presence of still water. But instead of the shepherd, here we have the peace of wild things and the grace of the world that are comforting and soothing. Just reading this poem calms me down. This experience that he describes, it's one of the only things that keeps me sane. Just today, I was at the little lake at the cemetery, watching a small group of northern shovelers, one male and maybe four or five females, pretty close to the shore, and they didn't seem to mind my presence. They were just swimming around in circles, doing their dabbling duck thing with their enormous bills, and it was amazing. And there were buffleheads and mergansers diving, and it was very soothing being in the presence of wild things. There's just something about that. These creatures remind me that I am a child of the universe. I am a creature of the universe. I may be human, but I am a creature. And I see these creatures I encounter as my family, my kin. This is my family. These wild creatures, they don't dread like we do. I mean, perhaps they're going to face tough things in their migration, but they don't know that, and they're not anticipating that. They're just busy with their feeding and their preening and their resting, and somehow watching that just gives me this incredible sense of okayness and belonging. It's grace.
When I look at your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars that you have established, what are human beings that you are mindful of them, mortals that you care for them? Yet you have made us a little less than you yourself and crowned us with glory and honor. A few words from Psalm 8. I think Jeanette is right in turning us to nature to see our place as small within something that is so much bigger than our worries and our concerns. It can help us keep those in perspective. It can help us know that we're part of something bigger than ourselves, that what we can't accomplish can be accomplished by others. It can be a part of something that we don't even understand yet. When I listen to those words from the psalm, I find my breath slowing and my heart stopping its racing a bit. The same as I listen to Jeanette read her poem. Slows me down, helps me be centered, helps ground me in what is important to me. Nature does that. Take those breaths now. You have some minutes set aside already. Use them just to be here. Hear the crackling of the fire. Listen to the wind. Watch the trees. Enjoy that child. And be present. The world we are a part of is pretty amazing. And it is so whole and complete without us. It is humbling and it's hopeful. You know, we really do live in an absolutely amazing world. Every time I stop and look, I see details, I see intricacies, I see relationships that stretch my imagination, that make me realize that life, that geology, that the way the world works is more than I could ever have imagined, and to think that I am part of it. And just yesterday, I discovered something brand new. Didn't know this before. The rainforest of the Amazon, that whole basin, did you realize it releases more water every day through evaporation than it does through the river? I never would have thought about that. I couldn't have imagined it. But just think what that means. I mean, just imagine the fact that that part of the world, which is so full of diversity and so full of life, is also spreading life through the air currents, taking moisture to different parts of the world and bringing more life there. And how would we ever have known that? It didn't need us to know it. It just is already going on. You are part of something that is so big and so amazing. And just being able to be part of it is a pleasure. When we stop, when we pause, when we breathe, and don't try to make ourselves so important. Don't try to always be accomplishing something. Don't try to justify yourself with our busyness, but just be part of what is already happening. Someone who captured this side of nature was Sigurd Olsen. His writings lured me since my early adulthood into the wilderness to discover myself, I guess, as I explored and got to know these wild lands. He was famous for spending decades exploring the area that we now know as the Boundary Water Canoe Area Wilderness, but he knew them in a more intimate way. He knew them as the wild lands of the people who were before him, and not just the voyagers of a century or so before him, but the people who had been there for millennia before him, the Anishinaabewaki people, as well as their neighbors in the region, the Assiniboine and the Mendawakinton people, people who had this land taken from them. We owe them a debt of gratitude for this wonderful treasure that we are now the beneficiaries of and are stewards of ourselves. Sigurd Olsen, in his exploring this land, was able to communicate to it, share it with us through words and ways that helped us see this simple engagement with it, where we were no longer in control, but control wasn't the issue. We were experiencing nature. We could experience nature on its own terms and begin to learn from it, both of the world around us and of ourselves. I want to share with you most of a chapter from his book, The Singing Wilderness, which was published by Knopf Press. It is a chapter called Pine Knots. Pine Knots. Pine knots are different from ordinary firewoods. They cannot be compared with birch or aspen or oak, for the time and effort cost of gathering them is beyond the realm of common sense and reason. The warmth they give is negligible, but the light effects when they burn have a quality and an importance that none of the others can approach. The burning of an old pine knot is a spiritual occasion, and the possession of a goodly supply for winter nights before the fireplace is a joy. It was late October when I made my last expedition for knots. I say expedition because each foray after the prized nuggets of resin is more like a hunting trip than ordinary wood gathering. You just do not go into the woods anywhere. You must know the terrain and something about the ecology of the forest in order to know where to find them. More important than anything else is to be in the proper frame of mind, to recognize your worth, and embark in a spirit of adventure. Ice was forming in the protected bays of the lake the day I set forth. There's barely a quarter of an inch near shore, but enough to scratch the sides of the canoe. The leaves are gone, and only in the hollows was there any remnant of the rusty bronze of the birches. Even the old gold of the tamaracks had disappeared, and now they stood sere and gray in the bogs, waiting for the snow. The grasses were yellowed, and in a little bay were covered with frost crystals. As a canoe slipped by, they moved suddenly in a breath of air, and the bay sparkled with millions of sequins. A lone flock of bluebells took wing from the open water, circled warily, and disappeared over the horizon. I landed the canoe on a grassy slope, crowned with birches, here at one time grew tall pines. Not that there were any stumps or logs in evidence, but the mounds that marked their falling show me where they had lain. Under the leaves and the duff were the knots, hard and sound and heavy. They would burn like torches, hold their flames as though unwilling to squander the energy that they had held so long. Near the landing, I found several weathered to a silver gray, pointed spindles washed and polished by the waves until they were smooth and symmetrical. They had come from a pine that had dropped toward the water, and I could see its ancient top in the depths away from shore. When I explored beneath the leaves, I found some sections of wood with the knots still in place. A blow of the axe, and they were free for the taking. But mostly the knots lay by themselves, with the brown disintegration of bark and wood still around them. I soon had a good pile of them down by the canoe. Here was the primitive satisfaction one finds fishing and hunting or in berry picking. Closest thing to it in wood gathering is the stealing from abandoned beaver lodges of peeled and clean sticks of aspen that have served their purpose long ago. Like finding knots, it is living off the country, bringing in something from the wilds which no one else could find for you, something you could not want anyone else to do because of the joy of doing it yourself. Knowing how the knots were made gives them significance, makes them unique and different from any other plant structure. All pines have resin ducts through which gold and fluid travels from the roots to the highest twigs. Where branches leave the main trunk, these ducts are bent, and because of the bending, the flow of resin is dammed, saturating, and completely impregnating the wood fibers. The same thing happens in gnarled and twisted roots, in any place where the free flow of resin is slowed. Although a great log may crumble into dust, the resin-soaked knots are impervious to decay and stay on for many years. That night, I stopped at the cabin of an old woodsman who felt about knots and resinous wood as I did. We had in common a vast respect for pine and what it could do. Before I crawled into my sleeping bag, I watched him go through the ritual he had followed for many years. In back of his barrel stove were several sticks of red pine, sticks as dry and full of pitch as he could find. I watched him select a piece, turn it over carefully in his hands, then seat himself with his back against the wall. Very deliberately, he shaved off the first long shavings, each one curling beautifully as it left the blade. The longer and thinner the shaving, the better the curl. The tighter the curl, the quicker the flame. The knife sliced through again and again, and with each slice, the contentment on the face of my friend seemed to grow. He contemplated the pile with satisfaction and watched the shavings twist and curl as though they were alive in the warmth of the barrel stove. "Nothing better," he said. "Got a fine smell, too." He handed me a stick to smell. "That would explode when the flame hit it," he said. The pile of feathered sticks and shavings was large enough. He pushed it carefully away from the stove to a spot against the wall where it would bask in the heat most of the night and in the morning be crisp and ready to flame. He sheathed his knife, for the ritual was over, the same ritual that in thousands of cabins and farm kitchens all over the land had been routine for generations. Here was real work, as important in its way as the setting of bread or the breaking of ground. This was purposeful, primitive, and satisfying, and most surely promoted pleasant dreams. How much better, I thought, would it be for city nerves if at the close of each day a man could put his back to the wall and in the warmth of a barrel stove, with the wind and sleet whipping to a gale outside, whittle himself a pile of fragrant pine shavings. How much more serene his slumbers than if he simply checked his thermostat. Sit with those thoughts and words from Sigurd Olsen for a few moments. Take some breaths and let them settle in. And let these words be inspiration for you to look to the world around you for what you're trying to find within yourself. It's one of the places to look. So we've been talking about finding our settled self. I mean, we have a big challenge ahead of all of us. There's going to be this push that all of us need to do. It's really important for us to do it. But like we've been saying, you're not going to do that well if you haven't found that place within yourself, if you aren't familiar with who you are and why you are and just found that settled place within yourself. But the question comes, like, is that it? is it just you and having to figure this out for yourself, or is this something that we do together? I think it is. In fact, I think there's a responsibility to help other people find that contentment, find that shalom, that peace, that settled self within themselves. That is actually a component of your finding it for yourself. So it was just a couple of days ago. It was Tuesday, Election Day, November 3rd. Yay, what a day, huh? And Chris Tripolino, who's part of the Fabric staff, he's our music guy, he tells me what he's doing. I'm going, whoa, I hadn't thought about that, but that's a really good idea. So Chris is here with me. Chris, what is it that you decided to do?
Yeah, well, I was finding that need in me to be a little bit more settled, and I was just reflecting on some of the people that were models for me in that and mentors in it, and, you know, people who have helped me see things with a bigger perspective, and just thinking about all the people that need that right now. And so I just started reaching out to friends and just people that came to mind as I thought about those things, the settling and really engaging a deeper kind of hope and willingness to be in the thick of things. And I felt like that was maybe something that I could do to maybe bring some settling to others and remind them of our connections.
Right. You told me about that, and I thought, that really sounds good. I just, like, not something I should do, but something I want to do. So as soon as I was able to clear things away, I just, like, was the first person to pop to my head that I wanted to reach out to. There are people that were important to me in my life that I've had some real meaningful experience, and I just shared with them kind of what you said, that this is the kind of time where I really feel it's important for me to find that settled place within inside me, and I was really wishing that for them. And I tried to express to them some of the real authentic things that I felt about them that helped me feel settled when I was in their presence. Pointing out to them what I saw in them, just thanking them for the role they played in my life, and wishing them that peace, that settledness within them, so that they could then go off and do what they knew that they needed to do too. And encouraging them, giving them permission to take that time to make sure they aren't just driven to do what's needed for other people, but make sure that they could be whole themselves. So it was fun. So what was it like when you actually did it?
It was really grounding to reconnect. You know, there were several of my college roommates that I reached out to that I hadn't talked to for quite a while, and making some of those kind of reconnections, and other friends that I hadn't spoken to for quite a while. And there was something for me that broke things open, realizing that I didn't need to know how they had voted, and my reaching out to them wasn't contingent upon them voting or voting the right way in my mind. None of that really mattered. What mattered was a deeper, truer reality of our interconnectedness. And for me, that was sort of healing. It was something that I needed and was sort of missing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I found joy in telling each person when I got into the midst of this email that I had no request. You know, usually you reach out to someone you haven't heard from for a while, and it's like, okay, so what do they want? And it's just, I have no request. I just want to thank you. I want to wish this to you. And it was good. I too experienced that helping me articulate to them what I wished for them made me somehow create it within myself.
Yeah. Yeah, I felt some of that too. There was a gift in the giving of it, but there was also often a response that amplified that sense of connection and was affirming. And that sense of connection, I really think, does something to my nervous system, to my soul, that helps me settle and ground and re-energize for the next opportunity.
Mm-hmm. I didn't hear back from everybody. I heard back from a significant number of the people. In each case, there was something engendered that was better than compromise. I mean, it was that unexpected, oh, wow, hey, look, you know, and so that was really good. I appreciated doing that. You know, my only regret is I have to wait 4 years for another election to do this again.
Right. Yeah, no, that was something that it poked at in me too, is like, especially right now amidst the COVID pandemic, I feel inspired to continue reaching out to people. And I don't know, it's really not that hard, not that time consuming.
No, it's not.
And it's so worth it. And so life-giving for me personally.
Yeah, making the connection seemed to be the important thing, and that's good. I think it's important to remember that we are not responsible for other people's settledness. Like, I can't make you settled by sending you an email or something like that. But I think in these relationships we have with each other, we can be a catalyst for it. Like, I can open that space for you. In fact, we're hoping that that's what this podcast is doing for people listening today, giving them a space and letting them know that they are amazing, wonderful people. And even though I may not know you personally, other people do. And people love you. You are worthy of love. And you can take time today to figure out who you want to be tomorrow. So that when the pushing comes, you're going to have that deep breath of life inside you. So thanks for that inspiration, Chris. You breathed air in. I think that's what inspire means to me. And let me breathe that out. How do you know when you have breathed long enough and it's time to get to work now? It's time to push. You know, that is a question that we just torture ourselves with. And like a lot of the questions that don't seem to be working, the reason is that it's maybe the wrong question. It's all premised on this idea that what we are called to do is a two-stage process. You breathe and then you push. The purpose of the breath was to be able to push harder. That's not really how it works, because you see, this isn't just something you're going to do right now. This is the way you are called to live. This is how we engage. This is how life works. The honest truth is that you're never going to truly be ready, and the need for your work will never actually finish up and go away. So when would you ever get a chance to breathe, or when would you ever know that you're now ready to push? This is not a two-stage process. This is a rhythm, an ongoing rhythm, like the waves on a beach, a continual breathing and pushing, pausing and moving, self-care and self-giving, loving self and loving others. Jesus talked about this a lot. And when he shared this commandment, which summed up all the others and stemmed back from the Old Testament, and said, love your neighbor as yourself, did you notice something about that? That word as, that combines the way we love neighbors and loving ourselves, that as doesn't just mean love them in the same way as we love ourselves, but love them at the same time. Love them while you are loving yourself. What that means is part of our ability to love others comes from the experience of our own self-compassion. And our ability to have that same self-compassion partly comes from our experience of loving others. It's part of a spiral. It's part of a rhythm that we live with. So do not wait to be ready. Just breathe. And breathe with me now. And use that breath to be whole, to look for the settled self inside. If you're tired, if you're discouraged, if you're enraged or hurt, depressed, or ready to go out and teach someone somewhere a lesson, I give you permission to stop and to rest right now. Let the news that is descending around all of us just fall to the ground and find yourself within it. I leave you with the words of Psalm 131. Yahweh, I am who I am. My heart is not lifted up. My eyes are not raised too high. I do not occupy myself with things too great and too marvelous for me. But I have calmed and quieted my soul. Like a child at its mother's breast, my soul, it is like a child at its mother's breast. O Israel, hope in I am who I am, from this time on and forevermore. So, You've got work to do out there. Big work. We all do. But it's too big and too important to not breathe first. Bring your best, your whole self, your three-stranded self. Peace.
It's worth keeping this conversation going. Share this podcast with a friend and find discussion resources at fabricmpls.com. You can also go to our contact page or reach out on social media to share your feedback and experiences, because Fabric isn't an organization sharing novel ideas. It's a community of people becoming more deeply woven. Thanks for being part of it.